Hello, my name is Josiah Barton. I am 31 years old today, and today is April 30th, 2023. I am speaking with Suzanne Barton, who is my wife and a nurse for 7 years. She is currently working to get her nurse anesthetist and is currently in school for that. And we are doing this recording in Erie, Pennsylvania. Hello, Suzanne. How are you?
I'm doing well. How are you?
I'm doing well. So I want to ask you a couple questions about your nursing career and then specifically talk to you about some things regarding resiliency. I want to know, first, just can you tell me about just what you did as a nurse? Like, what areas did you work in as a nurse?
Sure. So I have been a nurse for 7 years, and I got my start at St. Vincent in their cardiovascular neurointensive care unit. And I was there for a couple of years, and then I traveled to various ICUs in New York, Pennsylvania, and Florida.
Excellent.
And then as of May 2022, I've been in CRNA school to get my DNP with Gannon/UPMC Hammond School of Anesthesia.
Wow, okay. So can you give me some examples of when or places that you worked that you could really find some joy in being a nurse? You were able to find happiness in the things that you were doing as a nurse.
So I really like those moments where I feel like I'm making a difference, and I call them good nurse feelings. And I honestly didn't start feeling that way again after leaving St. Vincent until I went to Syracuse, New York. And it was a state hospital, probably one of my favorite places I've ever worked, like dynamite hospital, dynamite evidence-based practice, dynamite team, the whole nine. And in this instance, there was a 700-pound patient who had not gotten out of bed for several years. And we as a team worked and got him out of bed. He hadn't gotten out of bed because nowhere that he's been hospital-wise or nursing home-wise had the capabilities to both get him out of bed and have a chair that could hold that weight. So we as a team worked, got him up, and the look on his face when he got out of bed for the first time in that many years, you could just tell it was life-changing and how good it felt. Wow. And, you know, you don't really think how detrimental it is to you psychologically just not being able to get out of bed for several years. Like, that is, you can't do anything for yourself. And then to be told people don't have the resources to help you, that's tough.
So do you feel like, you know, you bring up the resources, like the fact that the state hospital had the equipment appropriate to be able to take care of him. But also, do you feel like the team as well, to kind of validate them as resources as well? We've worked in situations where I could ask the whole floor for help turning a patient, and everyone would claim that they're busy until I would then come around to you, and then you would actually come and help me.
It depends on the situation. I can't really assign a percentage of what makes up resources versus what's teamwork, but I feel like you need them both. So it could be 50-50, and I feel like it changes in the circumstance, because you can have the best team in the world, but if you don't have the resources you need, you're still not getting someone out of bed. And again, you could have the best equipment in the world, but if you don't have a good team to help you use it, it's worthless. Like, you need both.
Okay. So give me some examples of like the worst moments, times where you really couldn't find any joy, or like what was going on.
So probably my worst night in nursing was in Fort Myers, Florida. I came on and I was on a really toxic unit, and that's why they needed travelers there specifically. Like, nobody wanted to work on this floor. It had a reputation. So I came on, and there was drug abuse was very common in Fort Myers, Florida. It's common in Florida in general, but in this area it was very common. So he had gone on a drug and alcohol binge for a few days, came in, got intubated because he was aggressive. Before I came in, they shut off all of his sedation and just extubated him, and he broke his restraints. He was trying to hurt me, and nobody was coming to help me. The nursing assistant was walking by eating a McDonald's parfait, and I was like, can you get up here and help me? And she's like, why? And I was like, because he's going to hit me. one nurse took pity on me and helped, but that's the first time, and I think maybe the only time, I've cried at work, because it was literally an impossible scenario where I didn't have any help and this grown man was literally ripping restraints off the bed.
Wow. Do you feel like that apathetic approach from what should have been a helping hand, that teammate, like, that's got to be draining in a lot of different ways, because it's something that they could have put down their parfait and helped in that moment.
Yes, but that is the curse of all nursing, is when you can do everybody else's job, but they can't do yours, you are consistently just picking up the slack from everyone. So it's just the curse. And I feel like people know nurses aren't going to leave their patients a certain way, so they can get away with not helping, because again, you're going to pick up the slack and do what you need to do. But yeah, that's...
So do you feel like, is there anything that can really aid in that? I mean, is it the hospital systems with providing the right kind of people? Is it like, I mean, how do these things get better?
So I think I live by the words of what you permit, you promote, and it all starts with management. When you allow people to not do their job, to be apathetic, to fight with people to do this, you're allowing a few bad eggs to literally spoil an entire unit, and that's what had happened. Wow. And it's very sad. But that's where it starts, is with management. And again, if you don't rectify the situation, and sometimes that is getting people off your unit, not just doing corrective, like, action. But again, a lot of the problems, it starts with management.
So, when, you know, you brought up Syracuse, New York, you were there right at the start of COVID. And that was in the spring of 2022. What?
2020.
Oh, sorry, 2020. what was going on in Syracuse, New York at that time? I mean, what was going on in your life?
So, when I heard of COVID, I didn't really think anything of it. I thought it was just going to be here and then not. And I really didn't start taking COVID seriously until Disney World shut down, because we had a trip planned for mm-hmm. your birthday, and they abruptly were just like, parks are closed, hotels are open for 3 days so people can make accommodations to go, and that was it. But shortly after that, like, you know, all hell broke loose. They, mass amounts of patients were coming in, they were converting whole units into COVID floors, everybody was scared, nobody knew what was happening, you didn't know if you were gonna die, you know, being exposed, because there wasn't truly a rhyme or reason to those who were, like, perishing from it. So it was a super scary, uncertain time.
Yeah. No, I remember you and I, we did travel nursing with a camper, and it was something that, I talk about seclusion away from our families. We stayed away so that we could keep them safe, because we knew that we were amidst the virus itself. We were taking care of patients who had tested positive. We were working on units next to nurses who were getting sick. And, you know, we've seen patients who it really no rhyme or reason. We saw young, old, fit, and unhealthy patients yeah. get it and not do so well or do just fine with it. And really, it was a hard thing to see, even individuals our age who were suffering from it. I think it's even harder to see sometimes the people that we love, like our parents, their age groups suffer from certain ailments, and COVID was one of them. When we were there, there was an instance where I felt like it might have been the only time that I've ever cried at work, was I saw that you were in a room with a patient who had COVID. They were prone. And it was something that I had just come by, I had just worked night shift, I had given report, and I was on the opposite side of the unit, and I was coming over to just see you before I went home, and seeing you gowned up and everything, there was nothing I could do to protect you. There's this non-visible, invisible virus that is definitely in that room that you're in. Like, and it's something that in that moment I just felt helpless in any way that I could protect you or keep you safe. And it really got to me in that time to see someone that I love so much just like on the front lines.
Mm-hmm.
So, and you had shared with me about that patient, because do you have any thoughts about how like you may have been one of the last voices or the last hands that he felt touch him?
He did not pass on my shift, but I think it was a few hours later, because when I came back the next day, he was gone. In that instance, you have someone that's prone and paralyzed, and obviously they really can't, you know, feel you, hear you, things in that with the anesthesia and stuff, like that's the point. But his wife called, and I was having issues because he had a biz monitor on, which monitors your brain activity. So like for anesthesia and stuff, it's like your brain shutting down and sleeping. And his numbers just kept going down, down, down. And I was going down on his sedation to the point where I was at the minimal amount that I was comfortable with it being at for someone to also be on a paralytic, because it's not humane to have someone paralyzed and not sedated. And that just showed me his body was starting to shut down. And I'm on the phone with his wife, and I'm talking to her, and I'm stroking his back like he can feel me, because again, you can't take the caring out of the nurse. And I try to always be an optimistic person, and I truly believe that science only goes so far, and there's God. And the wife did not have any optimism left. He had been sick for a while, and she had to come to terms with the fact that he was dying. And that was hard for me to hear, because it's heartbreaking to think you're married for someone for so long, you share your life with them, all these moments, and he's dying in a hospital alone, and you can't even go see him. And you just have to work through these stages of grief from a distance, and you can't hold his hand and be there for him. And again, that's also taxing on the nurses, because you are being, you know, someone's family for them. You're being there trying to hold their hand when they're scared and answer questions and be there. And it's, you don't have all the answers to these questions they're asking. And sometimes you're just as unsure as they are about what's going to be happening to them.
Yeah. Burnout, definitely, you know, one of the elements of it is compassion fatigue. Yeah. And what are your thoughts about compassion as a nurse?
So I think that compassion is something that almost all nurses, I would say all nurses, unless you're like a psychopath, innately have when they come in. But that is one of the first things I see leave nurses. You are with very trying populations as a cardiac nurse. I have taken care of a lot of people who abuse drugs. And with that population, you have a lot of people that are mentally ill. So you have people that are not patient. They are used to, when they want something, they do it. Mixed with other mental illnesses, it can be a very exasperating situation, and it can really try on your compassion, because then you start developing implicit biases where subconsciously you're treating someone differently, because the last three people you've taken care of with the same medical history have done this and this to you. You start saying they're manipulative. You start justifying to yourself treating them differently, and that's wrong. And me personally, I grew up with several family members that have drug abuse issues, and going into nursing and taking care of people who are saying some of the same things that I've heard, that are giving me the runaround, that are acting a similar way, it was very triggering for me personally. And I had to teach myself to get my compassion back, and I had to learn to understand those people and not just treat them differently because of a medical history that they all shared. And for me, it was finding out that a lot of people who have drug abuse issues are also mentally ill, whether that's anxiety, depression, bipolar, anything of those, you know, things. And a lot of it starts out as they turn to a substance and they become addicted because it makes them feel normal. If you are someone who's anxious every single day, if you're sad, if you don't feel like you're worth anything and you can take something and just feel happy, it's really not that crazy to understand why they keep going back to it. because I think that's what everyone wants at the end of the day, is just to feel happy. And to me, I look at that and I think, you know, were they the kid who tried something with their friends for the first time and their friends were like, eh, not for me, and they couldn't put it down? You don't know. And it's sad, but you never know when people are going to be making the change for their life for the better. And it would just break my heart if someone looked back and thought that, oh, that's the nurse that told me I was never going to get sober, or that's the nurse that was so rude to me, that's the nurse that didn't believe me and this was happening. And that's not something that I want to be associated with. And I know personally, whenever I would orient baby nurses, especially in cardiac floors, I would say your first year is full of things people are telling you to gain and milestones people are telling you to achieve. The one thing you need to not lose is your compassion. And you would see it on their face when people would be ringing over and over again. They'd be giving them the runaround, and they're developing those implicit biases. And then they turn into explicit biases. And it's all super unfortunate, but compassion is something, it's like a muscle. You got to work to keep it.
You know, you bring up feeling like these patients kind of drag on you and whatnot. Do you have any other examples of kind of the characteristics of patients that were incredibly draining?
So for me personally, I'm an INTJ. So I am someone who, I'm very reserved, I think, and I don't always talk and express things, but it's the people who are super emotional at the very end of all the spectrums that really bother me. Someone who's hysterical, someone who's being just unbelievably rude, someone who's just really agitated, just someone who's being extra for no reason. And I understand people are scared and I'm sympathetic towards those things, but it's the people that are not actively dying that are freaking out. It really bothers me. And I'm happily able to provide like empathy and compassion, but some people don't want to be consoled. There's nothing you can do for them. They're just, that's who they are. And that gets to me. But it gets to me with everybody I meet.
Yeah.
Like, not just patients.
No, I understand that. I definitely think I, you know, the people who you do your best to try and give them everything and address every single one of their needs. And it's something that you come back with one thing and then they ask for another, and it's, mm-hmm. and it's it, nothing you do is good enough. Nothing you do is going to be able to fix them. And, it can be very tiring, because it's something that, if it's something as simple as like, oh, I'm sorry, I forgot to ask you, do you mind grabbing me a box of tissues as well? That's not anything bad, but whatever, it's that whole emotional component of like, there is nothing you can do to, mm-hmm. relieve their anxiety or help them find any kind of inner peace, it can be incredibly draining.
Yeah. Especially when you're with them for 12 hours and they're just ringing their call bell constantly and you have someone who's actively trying to die on you in another room.
Right.
That's what bothered me the most, is
you have an emergency situation.
I have an emergency. Yeah. And that's when, like, when you don't have good aides or good other people on the floor, it's tiring, because you shouldn't have, like, be letting someone in another room almost die because someone's ringing their call bell for the fifth time in 5 minutes because whatever, their blanket's creased. Like, it's...
Yeah.
It's too much.
So on the opposite end of it, what are the characteristics that kind of build you up?
So I like patients who are like, Susie, you're the best nurse I've ever had. I love you so much. You've made me feel so much better. I wish there was something I could do for you to let you know how much I appreciate the care. And the people that I say, you could give me a secret family recipe, and they do, those are the people that are forever in my heart. Because no one really ever wants to give you a secret family recipe, but if they do, then you know they mean the good things they said about you.
Do you feel like that's the biggest thank you that you've ever received as a nurse?
Yes, because it's only ever happened once. someone reciprocated, and I got a Thanksgiving stuffing recipe.
Okay.
But none of Nana's, you know, tomato gravy recipes, though. Those Italian ladies, it's tight to the chest.
So, you know, where, you know, we talked about like the positive things in nursing and the bad things in nursing. What are some of the common themes that you see with the positive in nursing? Is it because it's your niche? Is it because it's the people you're around? Like what impacts that?
So I definitely think nursing, it's a bunch of different things coming together because you need to like the patient population you're taking care of. I love cardiac patients. I always have. I gravitate towards it. I feel like I was able to learn cardiac information easy, and I think it's because I love them. But in that population, in your nursing toolbox, as an ICU nurse, you're sometimes not using everything because people are intubated and sedated. And when they get extubated, you're moving them on to a lower level of care and you're not seeing the progress they make. But if you have a patient who just had open heart surgery, you are getting them to the floor, you're extubating them, you're getting them out of bed, like sometimes the next day, 8 hours later, you are helping them walk. And on top of that, they just went through a like incredibly traumatic experience. So these people are super receptive to being educated because they know they need to make a life change. So I get to use all the tools in my toolbox for them. I get to educate them. I get to do walking and I get to be there encouraging them while they're accomplishing steps to things they didn't think they'd be able to. And you know, it's a good feeling because you're helping somebody and you're being there in the moments in their life where they need somebody the most. And that's a good feeling.
Okay. I feel like the common theme when you're talking about the bad situations was kind of more or less revolving around teamwork and stuff.
Yeah.
So, I mean, in general, like, do you like what you do?
I left bedside nursing for a reason. I like bedside nursing for what bedside nursing should be, but I don't like what it's become. With the pandemic especially, they are giving you sicker patients, they're giving you more patients, and they're making it incredibly unsafe, and they just keep throwing stuff on you when at the end of the day it's your license at stake, when it's someone's life at stake, most importantly. Because again, if you have a bad assignment and you're in someone's room all night, if someone's having issues, you're not always there to see it and notice those little things that can make the difference between someone having a super extended hospitalization or just a quick, easy fix that they're going to be moving on the next day. And that's really heavy to have on you. Thinking, did I miss something because I couldn't be in there? Thinking, even when you're in another room, is something going on in that room I don't know about? Are they okay? Like, you know, especially during COVID, you have to gown up in 19 things. Nobody was just running into rooms. Like, if you were checking on somebody, it was a process. And again, if you don't have good teamwork and you don't have people helping you with that, like, it can be scary. But for me, the bad stuff is management, what they allow to happen on the floors, incompetent doctors and NPs and things like that that don't listen, and just bad teamwork, people that are apathetic.
So you brought up management. What can nursing leadership do, you think?
I am a firm believer in what you permit, you promote. And the worst floors that I have worked on, you could tell that it was trickling down from management. They did not have a command of the floor. They were letting a few bad apples literally spoil an entire unit. And it's super unfortunate because there are toxic personalities. And if you don't have a manager that cares enough to get rid of those, then you literally just have cliques forming. You have animosity. You have crappy teamwork. And it's very apparent.
Mm. So how did you end up becoming a nurse? Like, why did you get into it?
So when I was 14, I had surgery and I felt really well taken care of by the anesthesia crew. And I was kind of lost when I was in high school, but after I graduated, I became a nurse's aide and I realized I wanted to help people. I kind of already knew that, but I didn't really think college was in the plans for me. But when I was researching if I was going to become an LPN or an RN, that's the first time I heard what a CRNA was.
And I was like, oh my gosh, I'd be able to provide that same level of care that I experienced when I was 14, when I felt like someone truly made a difference and like assuaged my fears and really helped me be comfortable. So I went into nursing with the ultimate goal of going into anesthesia. And if situations would have been different, I probably would have gone into anesthesia a little bit sooner. But definitely the pandemic and the way things are in hospitals and how bedside nurses are being treated, I... like, CRNA school was the pot of gold at the end of the rainbow for me. And it's difficult. I am back down to being a Padawan from a Jedi Master. And you have to be very humble in this situation because you're taking certain aspects of nursing and bringing it into the fray. But then you're also learning that you don't... forget the things that make you a great nurse, but you need to stop thinking like a nurse and you need to evolve on into this advanced practice role. And it's a lot to take in, but I've always felt very inspired by anesthesia, taking care of one of the most vulnerable patient populations. And that, with the fact that it's safe, I can never take care of more than one person for surgery, that I'm in charge of the airway and the stuff going on, and that's my focus, and I can give the best care I can give. It's incredibly refreshing to me because that's all I ever want. I want to give the best care I can give, and I don't want to feel pulled in 19 different directions and letting things lapse or not be seen because I just can't be there for all of it.
So, you know, you've gone through a lot in your nursing career. I don't think we saw this pandemic coming either. And, you know, it's something that you're incredibly resilient. You've gone through a lot of different experiences, good experiences as a traveler, bad experiences as a traveler. What does resiliency mean to you? And like, how do you have resiliency?
So resilience to me means that you can be handed any situation and make the most out of it and not let it break you. And that comes from having a poor childhood. I had to learn resiliency and I had to learn to make the most of what I was being given. And I feel like part of being resilient is being able to look at situations objectively and not blaming yourself for everything and understanding where other faults are and growing from it. And that's definitely not something that everyone has. I know a lot of people that internalize everything that happens to them. They blame themselves. They think people are judging them. They think that people don't like them. They think a whole bunch of stuff, and it's not healthy. And even now, like I said, I'm a Padawan again, and it's important to allow yourself to be that, because you went from being top dog on your unit to being someone who is, again, at the very bottom level of something. And you have to allow yourself that time to be that way. You have to not be embarrassed when you don't do things right, because people aren't looking at you and thinking you're stupid. They're looking at you thinking, oh, this is her first semester in CRNA school. Yep, that's okay. And that doesn't make it always okay to not do things perfectly, but you're allowing yourself time to grow and learn and do more in a healthy way where you're not internalizing things that are out of your control, because at this point you literally don't know what you don't know, and everything's a learning opportunity and every day is a day to do better.
Do you think that for people who, you know, you brought up the experiences of your childhood, it's something that it's like, I feel like a lot of people who would have experienced those same experiences would not be as resilient as you. I feel that you're very self-assured, you're very confident in who you are and what you do, and I mean, you even just demonstrated that by what you just said. But do you feel like for those who are not as self-assured, those who are not as confident, what are elements of resiliency that they can adopt, especially new nurses?
This is a great question, because it's honestly one of the most frustrating parts of ICU nursing to me is when you bring in baby nurses, and if you show any sign of emotion, like, I feel like they peg you and think you're not cut out for this. And then you see people sucking it up when they're really upset. They've had a really bad night and they're sucking it up because they don't want people to think they can't handle it, when having someone die is a natural human response to make you upset. You're not supposed to have people die on you and you just be like, whatevs. And I remember in Chambersburg, this orientee who didn't stay there for very long, like, every night she was coming in and she had train wrecks and I think someone died. And, like, she, again, on orientation, wanting to make a good impression, was like, okay, on to the next thing. And I was like, why don't you go take a minute? Are you okay? And I'm like, and it's okay to not be okay. This is not fun. And I feel like when I talk to someone else about it, they're like, well, you either got it or you don't. It's like, okay, so you're either an apathetic monster or an ICU nurse. Like, it doesn't make sense to me. And I feel like from the get-go, they make you fall in line and not show emotions and not do this. And that doesn't help you be resilient. That's just making you internalize more things. So I feel like new nurses, if the vibes on the unit weren't like they were, might be able to foster some more resiliency. But instead of providing like a safe atmosphere for people to grow in and learn in and be able to show human emotion, they're telling you to suck it all up. And, you know, anything like that's a sign of weakness that won't be tolerated. It's not okay.
There's a lot of evidence that shows that people who go through difficult experiences and have an appropriate reflection period, where they're able to discuss their feelings, discuss their emotions, and really kind of harness some sort of understanding, that actually helps them build resiliency. I worked on a project about resiliency, and that was one thing that was discussed. And it's something that, for burnout, it's something that there are so many things that go against us as nurses, and you brought up a bunch of them with even like the staffing and the hard work. And it's something that there are elements to it that are out of our control as bedside nurses. And, you know, you bring up how nursing leadership, you know, they have to make sure that their team is working as a good team and, you know, pluck the weeds that are causing issues and whatnot. But what are some of the elements that you think healthcare as a whole could really take and learn from? Because it's something that, you know, when this pandemic happened, my optimism was, will this cast light on some of the shadows of healthcare and will there be positive change? But really, it's something that the shadows have been shown, and there seems to not be any kind of resolution to some of the issues that are there.
We were healthcare heroes for a bit, but everything goes back to normal and people just don't care. And that's the apathetic nature, because people who do not work in healthcare do not understand. And that's why, again, we talk about being there for each other during the pandemic. Even talking to somebody and having them truly understand what you're going to makes a difference in someone being like, wow, that's tough. Like, people don't get it. People don't get that you can literally run for 12 hours, not be able to use the bathroom, and you're not eating, you're not doing anything, you're sleeping 4 hours, coming back into work to do it all again. People just don't get it. So I feel like we were highlighted for a bit, then people went back to not caring, but there's a nursing shortage. It's going to keep getting worse. So the ratios keep getting worse because they're not going to take less patients. And it's all about money. And it's all about just their bottom line. Like, UPMC Hammett is a nonprofit system in Erie, and they're coming up with almost $1 billion in revenue. Like, all the nurses that have literally been breaking their backs to care for these patients over the last few years that get like a $700 bonus. And it's incredibly frustrating, because I left bedside nursing. If I wouldn't have gotten into anesthesia school, I might be working at Target, because I don't think I could do it anymore, because now they are giving you more patients, they are giving you sicker patients, and because you proved yourself during the pandemic that you can handle it,
I don't see things going back to normal. They don't have a reason to. They just keep throwing stuff at you so they can make more money.
So do you think the wheels have to kind of fall off completely for true change to occur?
There is a reason why I feel like they want to keep nurses in like a subservient category where it's a yes ma'am, yes mister type situation. Like, if nurses realize the power that they had, the numbers that they have, they could really invoke true change. And that's what's even frustrating going to this next level as a CRNA and being at like the panel conferences and seeing what our lobbyists are doing. CRNAs are such a small fraction of nurses in the United States. I think nurses are like 80,000 strong, or it's some crazy, maybe CRNAs are 80,000, but like it's a huge number of nurses. If they all got together and lobbied and did all these things, like, there could be real change. Safe staffing ratios, mandated breaks, you know, stop giving us pizza parties. Why don't you give us like proper insurance for like mental health things, for the PTSD that you gave us? And it's all super unfortunate. But again, like, I think I spoke earlier, like, I had a light at the end of the tunnel through all this. I was focused on CRNA school, even our marriage, our wedding. I had goals. I was looking towards the bright things in the future, and I thank God that I got there because I feel so fulfilled and happy being where I'm at now.
Do you think that, was there ever a point where you felt like you just needed a real break from it all?
Yes. My first two semesters of CRNA school, I could have worked. It was online. It was front-loaded. I could have worked. A lot of people did. I was burnout to the point where I knew I could no longer provide compassionate care to my patients because I just could not anymore. And I would rather excuse myself from the profession than do that to somebody, because nobody deserves to be treated like that because it's not their fault. And again, you muster up the strength to do what you need to do, but when you lose your compassion to that point, when you lose, you know, you have the care fatigue, all those things, like, you need to take some time for yourself, realign your chakras, and just do something else. And I'm thankful that I was able to do that.
If you had to leave one final message for anyone listening to this, what would it be?
You are worth it. You are powerful, you are smart, you are so many things, and every day might not be great, but if you try to find the good in every day, even if it's a small thing, or even if you're just looking to the future, that can help you build resiliency. And again, like I said, like talking about our wedding, talking about CRNA school, like even if it's, oh, tomorrow's BOGO Chipotle day, I get a free burrito, like, whatever you can look at that brings you like an ounce of happiness, like Peter Pan, think of something happy and you'll fly.
There you go. Well, thank you so much for your time. I really appreciated interviewing you.
You're welcome.